You're listening to Face Off, episode 76, recorded July 4th, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com. All right, so 4th of July. Happy 4th of July.
Yeah. On my good mic. I feel good being back on a good mic.
Yeah, I know. You haven't quite got your icicle yet. It's in the mail, huh?
So I'm not recording on Skype this weekend. We're at Jade's studio with our nice mics. So
yeah.
So 4th of July, it's nice.
Yeah, happy Independence Day.
We would probably go camping, but we went last weekend. So.
You know, I was thinking about this, though, and it's, a lot of people go camping on the 4th because it's a three-day weekend, yeah. And it's like everybody goes camping on the 4th, and it's like I'd rather just camp on a non-three-day weekend with a lot less people than get an extra day camping with a ton of people out.
Totally.
Anyways, so speaking of, let's get to our geek tool of the week. You're going outdoors. I'm concerned about this because I'm a fair-skinned lad, is the amount of UV you're getting. I have a history of skin cancer in my family, so I do have very fair skin. I sunburn really easily, and it doesn't matter. I put sunscreen on, but inevitably I forget about it. You know, you have to reapply, especially if you're doing stuff like hiking, you're sweating, you've got to reapply. Our geek tools, more than one this week, because I care about this so much, are two tools designed to help you know when to reapply sunscreen or when you've gotten enough sun. The first one is the UV SunSense UV Detecting Wristband. They're just this little wristband that sits on your wrist that starts off white and it starts to get like change colors, turn purpley the more UV you're exposed to.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are these like those snap wrist things where you snap it on your, it's like straight and you hit your wrist and it curls around?
I don't think so. I think these are kind of like the Livestrong bracelets or whatever.
Oh, nuts.
I know. You really got a snapper, didn't you? I remember those. I loved those things.
They were ridiculous. But anyways, this looks cool. I mean, so we have two tools. This one is kind of the simple slap it on your wrist. Well, not literally slap it, but put it
right
on your wrist.
This one's sort of disposable as it's exposed. Just, you know, it changes colors, and then you have to get a new one if you want to, you know, the next day you go out. But it's really good, you know, for kids. It's really cheap. It's durable. You know, you can go in the water and it doesn't hurt anything. And like this one, it turns to a dark purple when it's time to reapply sunscreen, which is really nice. And then it starts fading again to let you know, like, maybe you need to get out of the sun because you've been out for quite some time. So, and this, what's good about this is, you know, if you're in the shade, then you are getting less sun, you know, so it's not just a timer. It's not like, okay, 2 hours, I got to reapply.
Right.
You know, it's very reactionary to actually how much sun you're getting.
And at $6.70 for a 7-pack, that's less than $1 a stick.
Yeah. So you got kids, you get a 7-pack, you know, you're going out to the lake, you slap it on all four of your kids, and then you know when they need to reapply sunscreen, and, you know, fairly cheap, durable. If you want to go the more expensive route for how much sun you're really using, we have the Oregon Scientific EB612 personal UV monitor. This is a little digital UV monitor, and it actually tells you how much you have. It has all kinds of cool features, like you tell it what kind of SPF sunscreen you're putting on. It tells you when you need to reapply.
It's got a clock on it, temperature gauge.
Yeah, it's like a good all-around outdoor tool to have. What's cool about it is it's, you know, it's reusable. Clearly, it's not, you know, like the wristbands, which are disposable when you're done. But it's not quite as durable. It is an electronic device. You probably can't, this one, you probably can't submerge underwater or anything like that. And you don't want to, it's $17.95 for one of them. So, you know, you have to get one for each of your kids if you really want. But, you know, again, either one works. Either way, you need to check yourself, make sure you have any sort of weird things on your skin, get them checked out by a doctor. Skin cancer is, you know, a big deal in my family. I've had a lot of family members that have gotten it, and luckily we've been able to take care of it pretty early, but you got to check out that stuff.
Yeah, so always wear sunscreen. You know, on this thing, even though this looks like it's kind of meant to be strapped on your wrist or maybe just checked, I could see this, like, putting it on the back of your backpack if you're camping or something like that, and just kind of letting it sit up on the top and monitor the sun and, you know, let you know when it's time to reapply.
Yeah, I was reading a review of the of the wristband one, and I could have swore I heard a lady say she put, and I'm not sure maybe if the directions say you do this, but I think she said she put sunscreen on the wristband.
Oh.
Because then it's like, you know when the sunscreen has worn off because the wristband gets exposed, the same with your skin. I'm not sure. Read the directions, of course, but that would be like a really cool thing that the digital one can't do, you know?
True.
If you can put sunscreen on your little wrist one, then you actually know when your sunscreen is wearing off and when how much UV is getting through it. Whereas the other one is just kind of a digital one. So if you want to kind of like monitor it yourself, figure out when you need to reapply.
That's especially useful if you're swimming in the ocean or something and you want to know if it's been washed off or not.
Totally,
know?
Yeah.
I remember once in Mexico, you know, you lather up and get sunscreen everywhere. And I forgot to put the tops of my feet.
Oh.
And that was the only thing I didn't do. And yeah. It just burned there like crazy. So especially if you're going to vacation and go somewhere where the heat is or the sun is really right. strong.
Well, like what I'm always curious about is we go backpacking a lot and then you're walking through trees and stuff like that. And so it always seems like you're cool. not getting a lot of sun. It's very cool. You get a breeze. I'm always curious to see how much actual exposure to UV we get in those situations. Because like I said, I'm always thinking about it. Like whenever we are hiking and we stop and take a break, I always hop into the shade because I don't want to get sunburned.
Right.
And the truth is I get sunburned more than I should. So something like this will help someone like me and maybe you check them out, you know, the UV SunSense bracelets or the Oregon Scientific personal UV monitor, you know, see how much sun you're getting. Make sure you're safe.
All right. Let's get into the web apps.
All right. So our first web app this week, this is a pretty little silly one. It's called is parade.gp. So apparently it's made in Japan. And what it does is you put in a Twitter ID or a keyword and you hit start and it makes, you know, one of the coolest features about the Wii when we bought it was, the Mi parade, which is like, you go and like all your random Mi's just kind of walk around in like a little parade and they march and stuff. Really silly. This is like that for Twitter. So you put it in and, you know, we'll play the music for everybody while we, wow, that is loud. So, you know, we got like this little thing going on in the background. Starts off with Face Off Show at the front. You know, I did Face Off Show, and then I can see all of our little followers, and it shows their little tweets. And
so it shows a little thought bubble with their tweet.
Yeah, people have tweeted recently. There's me running around. I'm catching up. There's our friend Tig. Hey, there's Rob Lund. You know, all these, a lot of our listeners, there's Mike Henderson and Eric Wendelin. And it kind of parades through, and then it's done. It's got funny music. It's cute. Not terribly useful, to be honest with you, but
it's worth trying once or twice.
It's a cute little fun thing. You're seeing a lot of cool little like visualization things like that out there these days using Flash and stuff. Cute, like fun. It. Check it out. Isparade.gp.
JP.
JP. JP. JP. JP. JP. Japan.
So what do we got next?
All right. Our next web app is... I don't know about you. My wife really likes chocolate. So I found this web app that is really cool. It's called the Chocri Design Your Own Chocolate Bar website. So what's really cool about this is you can go in and you start creating a chocolate bar. They're not cheap. It's $10 for a chocolate bar. Pretty big chocolate bar. I think they're kind of,
3.5 ounces.
Yeah.
This is the standard size that I saw.
So you choose what type of chocolate you want. I know Amber likes dark chocolate, so I'll choose dark chocolate. And then you get to pick up to like 5 possible toppings.
What kind of tops do we got?
We got fruit. We got spices, nuts, confections. You can get like the decorative things. So I know Amber likes fruit. So I'm going to add, we'll do some blueberries. Let's Ooh. let's do some orange. I love orange. Raspberries.
Make your own little Wonka bar here. Scrumdiddlyumptious bar.
Yeah, exactly. So
these look just like really tasty, like banana chips.
Exactly. Spices. They have some really interesting spices. You can get jalapenos, black pepper, ginger, coriander, chives, cayenne pepper. I mean, if you really want to try and make a different, an experience out of a chocolate bar. I happen to know Amber likes kind of your just traditional sort of fruity sweet chocolate bar. So, confections, they have like cappuccino chocolate, lemon drops, orange drops, Rice Krispies.
Fig bits, goji berries. I don't even know what those are.
Them goji berries, man.
You don't see that kind of stuff in candy bars, so it's...
No, you don't. And then there's like
something special.
Decorative things, like you can get little marzipan roses or carrots embedded in them and stuff. Really cute. And it's $10 for one, or if you buy 5, you get like a discount. I think you buy 4, you get 1 free or something like that. But
I think you can even name it, right? So it shows up on the wrapper? Or is that... So ooh, did I misread that?
I didn't look.
It says name your. Maybe it's just name it in the
Maybe it's just name it in the app. I don't know. But really cool. So you can make a personalized, you know, chocolate bar for someone you like. I know, like, you know, my wife would find this to be really cute. And she really likes chocolate. So you can make a bunch of cute little chocolate bars and give them to her or your friend or for yourself if you just want to try something good. It'd be interesting to try some of those different spices and stuff. Yeah, it would be kind of cool.
So the chocolate is organic and comes from Belgium. And they have, if you do the math on all the combinations they have over 10 billion possible combinations.
Oh, my goodness.
So you could really make your own chocolate bar.
Exactly. Pretty cool. Special for the people who are special to you. Check it out at createmychocolate.com.
Oh, hey. There's more. if you get 5 bars, you get one extra free one. So.
Oh, not 4. I was wrong.
So you could bundle it up, and then, you know, as people's birthdays or, you know, special events come up, you can kind of give them out.
So, well, I mean, like, cool. 50 bucks for 6 chocolate bars.
Yeah.
Very unique, package them up really nice. It's kind of like when you, it's funny when you start becoming an adult, right? So when you're a kid, you want things like toys, you want tangible items. Even in your sort of early 20s, you want tangible things. But when you start getting older, when you give presents to other adults and stuff like that, you tend to give things like food or disposable things because we all have so much crap. Like, I have so much crap in my house that people don't give me more crap because they know I have too much crap. So so now when you start getting older, they give you things like, you know, like sausage and cheese baskets or fruit baskets, you know, for Christmas and stuff. And so this is kind of a good example of, as you get older, start giving away these sort of, and it makes them, like, almost a little more unique, you know, one, especially this, like, one-time shot. Here's this chocolate bar made for you.
Yeah, if you know somebody likes strawberries, they tell you that, you know, that's their favorite fruit or something, you know, think about somebody special.
Coriander. I love coriander. So check it out. Create My Chocolate Bar. What was it? Createmychocolate.com. Hey, if you, and I'm not talking to Mark, I'm talking to you listening. If you have a news, a follow-up, or a web application you want to take a look at, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Tell us. We want to know about them. You. Talking to you.
All right. So let's get into our topics. This topic today that we're going to talk about is business software.
Yeah. And this is a topic that there's a lot to it. And you hear these three-letter acronyms being thrown around everywhere. And there's a lot of different types of software. And the truth is, I don't know it as much as I do. And a lot of them are ambiguous.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, there is a lot to them, and, you know, we're just going to briefly talk about them. We could probably do a show on each and every one. Not sure if everybody wants to hear that much about these, but it is interesting to know about them because most businesses do use at least one, if not all of these.
Absolutely.
And it's just something you're going to be running into. And if you're starting your own business, you're probably going to at least start with the basics, you know, like a CRM and some of the accounting stuff.
Right. I mean, some of this, the funny part is a lot of it too, is it's almost like a boys club in that if you don't know the language, it's hard to find that stuff.
It is.
Like I would go, you know, and search for like, you know, I mean, I wouldn't think like I need customer relationship management software.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like I need a ticket tracker or something,
you
know.
Yeah, I need a place to store customers' names and addresses.
Yeah, and it's like if you don't know the sort of the language, then it's really hard to figure out what you need and find the best choices, you know, because a lot of them, you know, a lot of these, especially the bigger enterprise ones, you know, they're being purchased by managers that have been around forever who know the language. But if you're like a new guy and like, I need a new software to do this, it's kind of hard to figure out if you don't know the language.
The other thing, too, is if you're in IT, I think it's important that you understand these because oftentimes businesses either make the decisions without the IT's support and talking with them. Absolutely. They just buy it and say, okay, now use this. I think it would be good. I mean, it would be responsible of an IT person to kind of check these out and kind of push them towards the managers and upper management versus the other way down. Cause you know better, you know more about software than they're going to know. They're going to hear the fancy business type stuff about it. But so yeah. I think it's important to kind of understand what, at least what they do in some of these things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very important.
So the first one, the big one we're going to talk about is CRM. I think these are pretty important. I think most businesses should have these unless you're doing kind of like point of sale.
Well, what is it?
So CRM stands for Customer Relationship Management.
Oh, what does that mean?
What is that? Well, just very simple. It stores customer info, like the address, phone number, the customer type, whether they're retail or there's just a lead they haven't bought yet, or you can store notes on them. Some of them have email integration to where every single contact you've ever had with this person, you know, even phone calls, emails would all be logged.
Right.
And so if you, this gets into like the support, like multiple support request type stuff, right, where is if I have a conversation with this person, I want to relay that information to the next representative, right, that's going to deal with this customer or, you
absolutely
know,
have, yeah, it's about sharing the information of the, right, customer rather than every person having, you know, a little black book with a little bit of information.
Right.
You're sharing that information. You're storing it in a database, a central location, where if anyone else has to interact with that customer, they have all that information. Like, let's say, you know, I've never sent an email to Joe's Plumbing, but you have, you know, and I don't have his email address. How do I get that? Well, with this, I know if I'm interacting with Joe's Plumbing, even though it's over the phone, I look them up in my customer relationship manager. There's their email address. I know how to send it to them, you know, shared information.
Some companies put notes in here, personal type notes, so they can feel more, they can kind of make the customer feel more loyal, or, you know, make them more loyal by making them feel like they're a part of the business. Yeah.
How'd Billy's soccer team do this year?
Yeah.
Good to hear.
Then the other basic thing is order information. You can kind of pull up if somebody calls up and says, "Where's my package? I haven't got it yet." You have information to their orders. You click on their order. You click on the tracking. You can see where it's at. You can say, you know, oh, it looks like it was damaged and they're sending it back, or, you know, it should be there today or tomorrow. There's all that stuff. I have seen VoIP integration to where you call an 800 number and it automatically goes to your representative based on your phone number.
Interesting.
And your information automatically gets popped up on the screen. Another way they do this in the really big companies, like telecom companies and stuff, is you enter your phone number or your account number or whatever, yeah, and automatically the representative will have all your information ready to go as soon as you're talking, yeah, with them.
Which is nice.
Another thing you can do is kind of inter-office communication with these things. Let's say George calls up and he's in our he's in our CRM system, and he wants to talk to you, but you're not around. I can pull up George's information, send you like a note that he needs to call you, or he called you, and then when you get to your computer, it'll give you a notice, mm-hmm, and you can see George's number and everything because he's in our database, and you can, yeah, just call him from there, and you can even see the note why he called or whatever. So instead of having little scribbly little pieces of paper floating around the office, you know, you got a little bit of,
absolutely, that's kind a of pain, that
stuff. Another thing is, since CRMs usually store the customer information like addresses and things, mm-hmm, a lot of them have built-in mass mailing stuff, so where you can do mail merges in Word and,
oh, nice,
kind of print out big mailings and things.
Right. I mean, it really is your customer database.
Right. You can, so the other thing you can do in a lot of these is schedule like appointments. If somebody calls up and says, you know, I'm pretty interested in your product, tell me more, and you tell them more and they say, oh, that was interesting. And then you know, end that conversation. You could say, remind me in 7 days that I should check up on this customer and see if he's interested, right, in buying, or, you know, and you can call follow him back,
totally,
do a follow up. So you can schedule appointments with them. And another thing that's, they kind of integrate, I mean, CRMs, and we're going to talk about this too, is eventually you'll get into the ERP stuff, which is, it's like every single thing is in one one piece of software.
Yeah.
They definitely, it's like the feature creep, like they keep trying to push stuff into it. And another one, so like another one is they have calendars in CRMs where you can like see what other office, you know, other employees are doing in the day and schedule like meetings with customers for that person because you can, right, see their schedules and things. So, yeah.
So, I mean, what are some of the ones out there? Just a couple examples, right? There's some big ones that you had to pay for.
So, looking at like some of the Wikipedia, surveys or research on like the most popular ones, there was SAP, which is really considered an ERP, which we're going to talk about, mm-hmm, in a second. But in my, like, from what I could tell, Salesforce was the most popular paid CRM. Right. The free and open source ones, there's Sugar CRM and then Gist, which we talked about in one of our podcasts.
Right. I actually use Gist. And the cool part about Gist is that it's totally behind the scenes. Like, I just use Gmail, I use Facebook, I use Twitter like I normally do, but Gist is kind of behind the scenes, like slurping up all the stuff I do with those. And then when I do need it, you know, it is nice to like pull up your name. I can see basically any interaction with email, Twitter, you know, documents and calendars and stuff that I've had with you, which is really nice. It really brings it all in the one spot, which is different than a lot of these. A lot of these, it is the system. You know, you use Sugar, you use Salesforce. But what's cool about Gist is it lets you use the things you do use, like Gmail or a Pop or IMAP email account, and integrates it all in one spot for you.
I'm glad you brought that up because so the CRM that we started using, not for FaceOff, for the company that I work with, we got it back when CRMs were just, you know, becoming popular. And one of the things that I really hate about it is it doesn't have a very good external API. You can't work with it. So I think most of the new ones do, especially Salesforce, but make sure if you're going to look at CRM software, make sure you can, you know, write custom scripts that automatically add customers or you can pull information out of them. If you can't, they're kind of worthless in my opinion, just because you know, let's say you have Google Checkout or you have like PayPal or something and you want to like tie, you want orders to automatically be associated with that customer or whatever. You don't want to be entering all that stuff by hand. Yeah. You know, you want to be able to programmatically do that. So make sure they have some sort of external XML or some kind of a API. The next big category is accounting software. A lot of them use, so, I mean, accounting software is just accounting stuff.
Well, there's same with kind of we talked about there. There's big paid accounting systems, big enterprise level paid accounting systems. We're not even talking about those because I don't know accounting. And you really, unless you're super big, you're not going to be using those. So don't even worry about it.
Yeah. For the smaller businesses, QuickBooks is very popular. I use Less Accounting. It works pretty good for me. Like you said, it does get just ridiculous. They even have like EDI, which automatically buys things when inventory starts getting low. It can get super complicated. Yeah. Automatic payroll systems. And
right. But you will need, even if you have an accountant, you will have to buy some sort of, you will need some sort of accounting system. And that's where like something like, you know, a lot for small, medium businesses use QuickBooks.
Yeah, I would say it's safe to say that all accountants know how to deal with QuickBooks.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so popular.
It's like a designer designers know Photoshop.
Right.
Most design, you know.
So if you go with the QuickBooks route, you're guaranteed that your accountant will be able to say, just send me your QuickBooks files and I can, you know, make your statements.
Yep.
The next one we talked about in episode 75 is support request trackers. Especially if you're doing a lot of tech stuff, you're going to get a lot of like support requests.
Well, and you need to be like a lot of CRMs do some of this too.
True.
A lot of them might have dual functionality. Some of the people consider that customer relationship management where, you know, it's like, hey, I have a problem with my product that I purchased from you. And so you
definitely,
you know,
well, especially, I mean, these support request trackers that we're talking about here are not really set up for phone calls.
Right.
And things like that, where CRMs are a little bit better at that. So, you know, these are more for like email type support trackers.
But check out episode 75. We talked about those.
Another one is asset management. These are like, you find these in universities and places with lots of hardware, you know, like computers, totally, and desks and all these things. One thing about this is it helps businesses make decisions about technology, like when do we need to buy computers, and kind of have a history of how many computers they have, you know.
Yeah,
just kind of at a glance. It helps with the accounting, things like that.
Yeah, because it's so easy for that stuff to get lost. It's all invoices, receipts, or whatever. You need something that kind of takes care of that and puts it all together. Then you know, like, oh man, this hardware is really old. We should probably replace it. You know, everything we have has an average shelf life of 3 years. This thing is 10 years old. Let's get rid of it.
They also have built-in things for like laptops and things. If you're lending out to employees, you got to keep track of all that stuff. You know. Any of that kind of thing.
Totally.
Another one that everybody's probably familiar with is email and the whole like appointment scheduling calendar type stuff. This is like Outlook, Exchange, Google Apps.
Yep.
Either one of those would work. I personally like Google Apps.
I'm all for Google Apps, man.
I like the whole cloud thing.
Yeah, it's
interface itself.
You shouldn't be in the business of managing email servers unless you're an expert at it. And most sysadmins are pretty good, but they're not experts. Google has a bunch of experts on it. I'll trust them.
That said, I think Outlook and Exchange are still, you know, this
ridiculously popular. Prevalent. Absolutely.
Definitely. So check both of those out. email mass merging or mailing. So we used to do this with our CRM, and we found that it's becoming more and more difficult to adhere to all the spam policies. Like, there's a lot of email servers that can detect if you're sending the same thing to more than 100 people. It automatically like flags, and or you can get locked out, or you can only do 100 per hour. Like, Gmail has a limit, I think, of 300 an hour or something. Yeah. And so we found that it's kind of better to just use like MailChimp or one of these like kind of services that are good at doing that are like whitelisted and they're approved to be sending lots of stuff because they adhere to all like the spam policies with like an unsubscribe link at the bottom and all that.
Totally.
The other thing with mass mailing is there's so many different email clients, and some of them support HTML, some don't. Some support, you know, IE6 compatible HTML, so you know.
And I mean, there's open source software that can do this, but again, you have to connect to a mail server that knows how to do things right. And I think that's why using a paid service for this really makes sense.
Yeah, and I don't know, MailChimp is the one I've used. I haven't used Campaign Monitor, but I've heard good things about it. It's really cool because you can like send test emails to yourself. I know I can count probably a dozen times where we've like accidentally sent to the wrong list of people, or accidentally like sent it out without the attachment, or just goofy things. So mass mailing is always something you gotta be really careful with. And I think these services definitely provide the value that you pay for using them. And I think MailChimp, you can send up to 500 people, like 3,000 some emails a month for free. And then it's paid after that.
Awesome.
It's a pretty good deal. So check those out. Snail mail mass mailing. This is oftentimes built into CRM software, like we talked about. There's also MailFinch, we talked about in episode 71, you can kind of just give them a PDF and an address, and they'll send it for
you. They merge it, print it on envelopes and everything, which is always the hard part, because you're like, okay, I mail merge the document, I printed off all those, now I have to stuff them in envelopes, now I have to print the envelopes, and it's like totally a pain in the butt. This takes care of it for you.
Online meetings, depending on what you're doing, especially tech stuff, but not necessarily. It's good to kind of meet with somebody on the phone and kind of show them a presentation or something.
Right.
I'm seeing this more and more. People are using like GoToMyPC. We talked about LogMeIn Express on episode 54, which is kind of a free
one-on-one. You can use Skype. You can share your screen with Skype if you want to share a presentation, or just to do video conferencing, with Skype.
Yeah. It's good to have like a demo or something. If somebody calls up and says, "Hey, I want to see your software, or I want to learn more about your service," it's good to have a presentation or something where you can say, "Okay, well, join this. Here's a link, and we'll talk about it."
Totally.
I'm seeing that more and more. So, another one is like CMS software.
Content management systems. Yeah, if you don't know that, which most people do.
We have definitely talked about that. It doesn't really help businesses to have a website if they can't be constantly updating the content and stuff themselves, especially if they're small enough to not have like full-time developers, but they pay to get a site made. You're going to want to at least know about these CMSs. It blows my mind
how many small businesses still pay for like a web designer to go in and make edits to their website.
Yeah.
You know, I think it happens a lot more than we think.
So these ones that I picked specifically, Magento, which we've talked about, Interspire, they're made for e-commerce as far as like they have all the payment systems built in and shipping and all that stuff. And you want to tie these to your CRMs and you want to be able to take orders and process those orders. These are the kind of the CMSs you're going to be looking at.
Right.
So in episode 46, we had like a complete CMS showdown. I think it was a 2-part series.
Right.
Check that out for CMSs.
It's pretty old. I mean, it's dated now, but, but still check it out. Useful information there.
Google Analytics, if you've got a site, you want to be checking that. Social media management. So this is kind of like the CRM for social media, you know, CoTweet. We've talked about this.
Yeah, we use and love CoTweet. I think CoTweet's awesome.
I think Twitter has established itself enough that most businesses should be on it and they should be tweeting. And CoTweet, it definitely helps to have like multiple employees being able to handle requests and things.
Totally. Absolutely. So,
the big one is ERP. This is short for, or this is the acronym is Enterprise Resource Planning. This is just a big
piece of software that just handles the entire business, right. the entire enterprise. You can have multiple businesses in multiple locations across the world, you know, across the globe, and they all communicate to each other. Right. They all have accounting. Everything
they're
is in
huge. Like, they're ugly, and they're for the big guys, and they're expensive. Right. And
right down to like programs that like make access cards so you can get in the door. Yeah. Like,
just crazy just stuff.
Everything. Small businesses that we kind of focus on, we're not going to be talking about too much about
these.
No, I
mean, you
kind of
make your own ERP, like, with different tools, right? That's kind of the whole point. It's a small business, you know. These tools are huge. They're expensive. You pay for huge amounts of time to have them customize it to your business. And the whole point is, if you're a small business, you're pretty flexible enough that you can use these other tools, and yeah, maybe they're not fully integrated together, but they work, you know? Yeah. Like a lot of CRMs, the higher-end CRMs, some of them have the social media management in them, but mm-hmm. you can't pay for that. You can't buy that because it's a big, you know, CRM right. system. So that's okay. You know what? I'll use CoTweet, and I'll use my own, you know, little free CRM, and they don't work perfectly together, but they work, and that's good.
Yeah, I think you could easily build 80% solution to a full fancy ERP for free or very low cost.
Right, yeah.
Might not be 100% SAP or something. But
yeah, it might not be perfect, but it works.
Yep. So definitely look at some of these apps before going the ERP route. I'm going to tell you right now, they start at like $25,000,
$50,000.
Yeah. So, another one is shipping and warehouse management. You know, your orders come in, the warehouse needs to know how many orders. Well, let's say if you're shipping stuff, if you actually have like products and widgets that you're shipping out, your warehouse is going to know the orders and if it's ready to ship or not, and they pack it up and labels and print it out.
Yeah. So that is a showdown of some of the different business software types out there. Like Mark said, we could definitely go into detail with each one of these and talk about them further. They're pretty big chunks of software, but you know, we kind of talked about some of them, and we have some small, you know, cheap or free alternatives to each one to help you if you have a small business to kind of get going in that direction. There's some cool ones like that. I mean, until we talked about on the show, I never would have thought existed, but now that they exist, I would totally use them, like MailFinch. I think MailFinch is an amazing idea. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So check them out. That wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to thank you guys for listening, and I want to remind you that if you haven't subscribed to the show, go to faceoffshow.com/subscribe, and you can do that there. You can also leave feedback for the show, and I highly encourage you to by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Tell us, you know, geek tools, web apps, topic ideas. We love to talk about the topic ideas you guys submit to us. So thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.